Nicole Brandon, and welcome to Hourglass Bride. This is such a special, sacred show today as we approach the holiday season. I really wanted to share with you the art of loving and giving. And I still have incredible memories of my childhood. I remember coming home from school and crying hysterically because somebody had told me that there wasn't a Santa Claus. And my mom started to cry, and her knees buckled, and I never forgot that image. And my mom said, "I feel very sad and disheartened that someone had the need to tell you that. Because when you're little, you could see Santa as a man in a red suit. And as you grow, so does your perspective, and you could start seeing Santa in people's hearts. And I hope that you always believe in Santa and in the gift of giving and in the love." And so today's guest is so very, very, very special to me. And it's such a great honor and a privilege and a pleasure to bring her on. Today we are talking with Reverend Rio Kelly. And Reverend Rio Kelly, I mean, her heart was called to ministry, and she really remains true to this calling. Her ministry and vision is to bring the world together through loving relationships, or she calls it loving out loud, realizing that the very first relationship is the one we have with ourselves and with spirit. And she is so committed to assisting others to remember that we need each other, and that despite this high-tech society, it is only through relationships and love that we truly meet ourselves. And so she teaches from the knowingness that we learn to fully love ourselves out loud. And she even teaches a course on that, which we're going to talk about, and how we become available to loving others in the very same way. And so she has believes in one community, one heart, one love. She is just remarkable. She's an Agape minister right now, the director of admissions at the Agape Registry. She is also a global community-based minister in relationships. And she serves on the prayer ministry. She has assisted the university classes. She deepens God's vision in her life with other people. She was among the inaugural class of the ministerial graduates in June of 2008. And her path as a minister continues to emerge as she really strives to embody the qualities she has and elegance. And I think that those words so beautifully describe her authenticity, enthusiasm, and elegance, because when you meet her, she really is. She's the embodiment of grace. She's the embodiment of love and generosity and goodness and energy and warmth. And there is a complete ease within yourself and the world around you when you are in her presence. You just know that everything is okay, and you're so centered in the core of your being. And so I thought for today's show, what a beautiful, beautiful person to bring on, someone that understands the relationship with giving and with love in such a special way, in such a magical way for the holiday season. So I am very honored and blessed to bring forward today's guest. Welcome, Reverend Rio Kelly, to the show.
Hi. What a beautiful. What? Thank you. Oh, my goodness, I'm blushing. Thank you so much.
It's all you know, truly. I mean, what an incredible calling to have a calling of the heart.
Ever since I was a little kid, I've been called to love, you know, and to see love beyond anything that was showing up in a circumstance or a condition. And so I've done my best to listen to that calling, even through processes of my own where I didn't hear it so much. The thing is that I've done my best to just continue seeing the love in everything that I look at, even when it's not always that pretty on the outside.
Oh, I love that. So what is loving out loud? I mean, I love to say it. It's something that you just want to just walk around. And I mean, it trickles off your tongue like supercalifragilistic. Like, it's so beautiful to say. Loving out loud.
Loving out loud is exactly what I just said, really. It's loving beyond the condition. I live in around Venice now. I just moved from Santa Monica, where I lived for 15 years, and I now live in Venice. I'm a Venusian, Oh, no, wait a minute. That would be from Venus. I'm a Venusite, anyway.
And I just want to share with people, because we have an international audience and people listening from all over the world.
Oh, wrong. Venus, California.
Venus is in California in the United States, for those of you that are listening abroad. So.
Although I am open. I am open to going to the other Venice with the canals and the boat and the, yes, and the gondolier. I would so totally do that in a heartbeat. But I am talking about Venice, California. And in Venice, California, there are a colorful bunch of folk, and that also includes a lot of homeless people. And so I have the opportunity, literally, to look out my window at night and see them sleeping on the streets and know that even right where they are, love is. And so I get to see beyond their physical condition and see beyond whatever might be going on outside or seemingly outside and see the love at the very center of it. And that's what loving out loud is. When we can look beyond the condition, and when we can look beyond the seeming chaos that's going on even in front of us, then we're really, truly loving out loud.
That's just incredible. And now talk to me. I mean, this morning I went to something called One Voice. And One Voice feeds all of these families under poverty level. And they were talking about today that in the economy, that we don't even realize that the working poor, people that are just barely making it and able to feed themselves, that now with the economy the way it's been, that people will drop jobs and say, okay, well, I don't really need this person anymore, or we don't really need this job, or we need this only once a month where it used to be every week. And people that were barely surviving now are, you know, if they're lucky if they could eat cereal, or they're lucky if they could find an apple and that becomes dinner. And so watching the joy this morning of people receiving food, receiving gifts. And so at this holiday season, I know that so many people think that, okay, especially people that are listening to the show that are now newly engaged, or people that are in love, or people that have been married many years, think that they have to go out and buy all these gifts for their partner or for their mate or for their boss or their children. And so can you talk about the holiday season and giving in a different way from your heart?
It's interesting that you said that, because I'm on social media all over the place. I'm on Facebook and Twitter, and one of the posts, the actual post that I made probably the night before last, I addressed that in my post, and I'm trying to find it, actually, because the way that it flowed through me was exactly what you are saying. I said, if you're wondering what to give your family or friends for Christmas, give love from your heart. The gift of your unique self and your heartfelt love is better than any store-bought present you could possibly purchase. Your love rocks. Love rules.
I love that. I mean, that's just, it's so fantastic, and it's so true. And caring and giving and the art of that. And I think that there are firsts, like people that are just getting married, their first Christmas together,
mm-hmm.
or if they're newly married, their first Christmas together.
Mm-hmm.
It's, or even if it's a baby's first Christmas, we have these firsts, magical, mystical experiences, but what makes them magic is not how many presents are under the tree. It's the fact
yep.
that you're sharing this season of mm-hmm. love, of light, of people singing, of joyousness. So, I mean, I was walking down the street today, and I cannot tell you how many people just walking down the street said, Happy Holidays, Merry Christmas, like they passed me on the street, people that I've never met. Just, they're like carrying that with them. And
mm-hmm.
so, it's so fabulous. So you decided, or you had a calling to love, which,
mm-hmm.
and how did that start? How did that begin? Did you, as a little girl, have a calling to love, or was this?
I was an only child, and so I always wanted brothers and sisters. And so what ended up happening was I loved all my friends, and I felt like if I could just love enough and let them know how much I love them, that all of the seeming troubles they were going through would be okay. And I don't know how else to explain it other than that. You know, I've always felt a deep calling in my heart that love was the answer, and love is the answer to everything. Even before I had an articulating, could articulate it, that it was love. And it's not a human love. It's beyond human love, because as humans we are, you know, we are flawed, and and what can appear as love is actually sometimes lust or, you know, exchange, you know. But true love and real heartfelt love is a feeling tone of wellness, of knowing that regardless of the situation or the circumstance, that everything's going to be okay, even if you don't know how. And so when I was a little girl and I would see some of my friends whose maybe parents weren't so nice to them or something like that, and they would come and cry and say, I got yelled at or something, I would be the one that they came to, you know, and I'd say, it's okay, it's okay. I don't think much has changed somehow. But it's always been that way ever since I was a little kid. People would come to me and tell me their troubles or tell me what was going on. And I always felt like I had a responsibility to help them remember that just being who they are is good enough and is wonderful just by being alive.
So that's fantastic. That's so beautiful. I mean, I love that as a little kid that you did that, that you were the mediator. And I know in you, I could just see that. And now that, you know, it's Hanukkah and the season of lights, and it's Christmas and the season of the light within, what is Christmas to you?
Christmas. Christmas to me is a combination of all the holidays, actually. I was raised Catholic, and then I decided to be Jewish when I was 16 because I fell in love with a Jewish boy. So I celebrated Hanukkah after that. And what I found, and of course, you know, being at Agape, I celebrate Kwanzaa as well, which is also the light. And I found that Christmas is really the Christ consciousness or the love consciousness that's within each and every heart. Whether you call yourself a Christian or a Jew or a Muslim or it doesn't matter, you know, or Krishna, all of it is about the love. It's all about that divine light that's within each and every one of us. And so Christmas for me is the season of joy, is the season of love, is the season of giving of ourselves and our heart, and sharing of our heart with those around us.
That's such a special, beautiful answer. It really is. And then, you know, how do people as a couple, and this is a question that, you know, I actually would love to do a separate show on at some point, but I would love your view and opinion on this. When people are just getting married or they're just forming a partnership, how do they decide where to give? I mean, there's
what
so many charities you can give to the SPCA and to the people in other countries, and you can give to your church and like this morning, you know, all of these families. And how do, as a couple, do you decide we're going to combine our resources and our love and our hearts and our talent, and this is where we're going to give as?
Well, I believe for you know, when we're in relationship, it is a community, a communal process, and that would be going within each heart, within my heart, within my partner's heart, and finding out what is calling to us individually and as a couple. Because what may happen is people individually may be giving to certain things or may have given to certain things in the past, but then as a couple, they make a decision to do it in a different way. They may give to the ASPCA, or they may have get whereas before they may have given to the, you know, Heifer Society or something like that. And what I have coached and well counseled people who have asked me similar questions is, as an individual, you stand individually. As a couple, you come together and make the decision as a couple, and realize that wherever it goes, it's still love being shared. There's circulation happening. So it's not like you give in one place and it's not given somewhere else. Does that make sense?
Yes.
There's no lack. And when we look at our lives as being fulfilled, and that everything that we're sharing is from our heart of love and from whatever resources that we have and we choose to share, the reality is there's nothing lacking. If I'm giving in this place and not giving over here, that doesn't mean that there's lack over here. It means that I'm giving from a heart of abundance, and I trust that this particular place, that particular place, that charity, that person will all be supported and sustained through somebody else's heart choosing to give there. Okay?
That's such a great answer.
That's what I would say, is choose as a couple. You're going to continue to retain your individuality. You must, in a relationship, continue to retain your individuality. So there may be a portion of your own gifting that you give as an individual, which is the other recommendation I would say. I would say you give as an individual to your individual charities, and then you pick a charity or a place to give as a couple. Don't ever lose your individuality in a relationship.
And you were saying at the beginning of the statement that when people come to you for counseling and, mm-hmm. you know, and they have this question and you're sharing this, and so when is the right time to seek spiritual counseling as a couple? Is it before you get married? Is it
yes.
through the course of your marriage? What do you recommend for people?
I recommend that before they get married, at least a month before, at least a month before the marriage and the wedding, that there needs to be a number of sessions with the couple. Mainly because when we come together, we have our own individual ideas of what marriage is going to be like. And we need to make sure that we've let go of our parents' marriage and the marriage that we grew and the relationship that we grew up watching, which is our parents' relationship, no matter how good it was. It doesn't matter whether it was good, whether they got divorced. That's not the point. The point is that unconsciously, and I mean that literally, unconsciously, when we come together as a couple, we come together with our own ideas of how marriage is supposed to look. And so when we come together as a couple before we get married, we have the opportunity to let go of old relationships, including those of our parents, so that we can come together as a couple developing our own relationship and having our own marriage rather than having our parents' marriage, which is usually what happens when people don't address it in advance.
That's so profound, because I really believe that's true, and that the communication, we've had incredible guests on the show, and some of the guests we've had have been people that clear debt and people that talk mm-hmm. about how to combine your money and all of this, and it's incredible how many people wait until after they're married
yeah.
to have these really, you know, stark conversations that they mm-hmm. really should have had beforehand. And
yeah.
so that door of communication, and one of my favorite shows that we had on the air this year was Amanda Rain on how to speak the unspeakable
mm-hmm.
and how to have those difficult conversations on how to ask for what you want. But I love the fact that, you know, you're suggesting to people that they come for counseling beforehand and mm-hmm. that they really learn how to communicate in a deeper, more loving way, as you say it. And, you know, and so your class that you have, which I love this title, I'm going to write it all over my house, Loving Out Loud, Relationships, right, as a Spiritual Practice. And so mm-hmm. is that a class for couples or for individuals to learn how to love themselves and God? And
It's a class for individuals and couples, both. I've had last year when I give this usually about once a year, and I give it where I work, which is at Agape International Spiritual Center. And it's an 8-week course. It's every Tuesday for 8 weeks. You know, the price is like $250, which is a really good price, amazing. But I keep it low mainly because of the fact that I want people to be able to afford to come, you know. And I know that especially if there are couples, sometimes that's like, wow, okay, that's $500. Yes, it's an investment in our relationship. The couple that I had last year, one of the couples that I had in my class last year was on the verge of, their marriage was on the verge of falling apart. And, of course, they didn't. They both did their own work individually in the class. When a couple does come to the class, I put them in separate, smaller groups so that they can develop on their own and then be able to come together, you know, when they're outside of the class to address whatever they need to address that has gone on in the class. But it's really important that everybody learn to do their own growth work, their own growing. And so it's for individuals, and it's relationship as a spiritual practice is not just intimate relationships. It's all relationships. It's obviously the first relationship we have is with ourselves and with spirit or God or love or whatever you want to call it. But it also, it goes into all relationships, the relationship that we have with the clerk at the store, the relationship that we have with the guy who's cut us off on the freeway, the relationship that we have with our sister or our brother or our children or our parents. All of those are addressed in this class because we do a lot of different things. We do a forgiveness work. We do, you know, it's a deep class. It is not for wimps, meaning there's a lot of introspection and a lot of experiential work that goes on in this class. So, yeah, it's pretty good. It's deep.
It's so exciting. And if people are interested in taking the class, how do they find out about the class and how do people find you to do counseling
work
with you?
They can find me and also find out about the class by going to www.agapelive.com. That's agapelive.com. And if they click on Agape University, Winter 2014 classes, my class will be right there along with all the other 2014 winter classes that are happening at Agape, but mine will be in there. And they can register, they can see what the course description is. And if it calls to their heart, I would love to have them in there. It's going to be a good ride. We have a good time. We have a lot of fun. We have a lot of laughs. We cry a lot. We, you know, scream, but we grow together, and we always remember that love first and love out loud.
That's so genius. It's so exciting. I can't wait for your class, and I think what a wonderful way to start the new year. It's just such a brilliant way to step into love. I can't imagine. Like, my New Year's resolution is to step into love, to love out loud.
Yeah,
I think that's a great resolution. Really,
yeah, it's a lot of fun. And, you know, the thing is that I grow every year, too. You know, it's not just me standing up there teaching people. I'm the guide on the side, you know. I am the facilitator of the love that's already within each and every person that walks into that class. And so I'm here to facilitate that love that's already within you, each and every one of you.
I'm so thrilled for you and for the people that are able to come to your class and that are listening to this show and that are drawn to Love Out Loud. It's just such a beautiful experience, and experiencing you is such a beautiful experience. You're just such a loving light and such an incredible just wealth of wisdom and education and joy. And I just think for anybody to spend their Tuesday nights with you would just be fabulous. What a great way to, you know, be in your week and to learn to love out loud. So, you know, and if anybody has any questions on how to go ahead and register, you can always reach me directly or reach out, you know, as Reverend Maria was saying, and reaching Agape Live to register for the class. But I highly recommend it. And Agape, for those of you who have not been there, is such a beautiful, loving community and space, and it doesn't matter what your race, what your religion, what your background. It doesn't matter if you just had an epiphany today and just got knocked on the head that all of a sudden you had a realization there's spirit and love. It's the place for you. And if this has been your entire life, it is the place for you. And if you are looking for loving community, certainly one that is warm and welcoming. You will find it over at the Agape community. And so I love that that's where your classes are birthed and where you're holding the space. And it's just so fantastic. It's just beautiful.
Thank you.
And then I had a question.
It's a beautiful place.
It is. At the beginning of the show, I don't know if you had a chance, you know, as I was doing my intro, that I was talking about my own experience with Christmas when I came home and that somebody in school had told me that there was no Santa.
Mm-hmm.
And this morning I was working at One Voice, which is an incredible organization that feeds all of these families under poverty level. And they were talking about that we had Santa Claus there. We had reindeer there. I was so excited. I'm like, oh, kids to see the reindeer. But all of these kids, they get face painted and they meet the reindeer and they get books and they get toys and the family gets food, you know, turkey and vegetables and carrots and bread and pies, and, you know, and it's amazing for people who might not have eaten in weeks. Like, that food is so scarce, and for them, just any food, and to be able to give a toy a child. But they were talking about this morning how they would say to the kids, you know, do you know who's inside? And some kids would say, Santa! And they'd say to other kids, do you know who's inside? And the kids would sort of shrug and not know, and then they would say Santa, and the kids would get so excited. But that this one little boy, who was awfully small, and they said, do you know who's inside? And he just sort of stood there. And they said, Santa, and he just sort of stood there. And then he went through the whole thing where he got hugged and he got face painted and he met the reindeer and he had books and he got toys and he met Santa and they gave him food. And then the mother came out and said, I don't want you to think that my son was rude, but we never told him about Santa or about Christmas because we don't have anything. So we just never even told him about the holiday. So he didn't know what. And, you know, so how do you, you know, when kids believe in Santa or when someone was really mean, like to me in school and told me there wasn't no Santa, or what do you recommend for parents to say to their children? And
well, I recommend when and this has come up, you know, when a lot of parents, they have kids and they don't have a lot of money, you know. There was one woman that I was counseling, her husband had died, and she had two very small girls, and they were, you know, wondering about Christmas and about Santa, and was Santa going to bring them anything, and, did, you know, is their daddy, and all of this kind of thing. And I said, you know, what you tell them is you say that Santa is about love. Santa is not just about presents. Unfortunately, most people think Santa is about presents, but Santa is really about the love. And so you can have a, you know, something that was handmade and give that to your children. And you can also, you know, it doesn't have to be expensive or what some people would call expensive. When I was a kid, my parents didn't have a lot of money either, and there were frequent times when I got handmade gifts that were from my parents, but they were from Santa as well. I got handmade presents from Santa. Santa had decided to make the presents himself because he loved me so much. And you see, there's a way of saying it. You know, Santa only hand makes very few presents because he's very, very busy and he's got elves to help him with most of the things. But when you're a very, very special little boy or girl, then Santa says, okay, I'm going to hand make this present for this little boy or girl. Do you see, there's always a way that you can explain it that will make the child not look towards materialism, but that will make them realize their importance and the fact that they matter.
That's such a great answer. That's so wonderful. And then what happens when somebody says that there isn't a Santa anymore?
I had somebody tell me that at school too, and when I went to my mom and dad, they said, well, you can believe that if you want, but we're telling you that there is. Because regardless of whether we have given you things and written Santa on it, or whether somebody else has given you things. Santa exists. The essence of love, of giving, of sharing always exists. And Santa is about the energy of sharing and of love rather than a guy in a white beard and a red suit.
Yes. That's so profound. I know this morning I was so touched. It's funny, when right before the show I ran into some of my neighbors who I've never met before, and they said, "Hi, Nicole." And I looked at them, and I've never met them before. And then they said, "You're wearing a name tag." You know, and I had the little reindeer name tag or whatever it was. And I explained to them that I was at One Voice this morning with all of these children that are under poverty level. And immediately they wanted the information to see if they could still go down and to help these kids today and who these people were. So it's incredible how just having that spirit and that energy and light, people feel it and they want to be part of that, of the love, of the giving, of the cherishment, of the joy, of the beauty of the holiday, you know, and the song of life. And I remember I was listening the other day to Lynn Twist, who is incredible, and Lynn wrote the book The Soul of Money, and Lynn was saying that the word philanthropy means the love of mankind. It has nothing to do with money. It means love of mankind, and that some people, the way they love mankind is by sharing their financial resources, but that's not what the word means. The word
right.
So we're really all philanthropists in the way. I remember that for years and years, and even now still, every year I've been speaking for Career Day for elementary schools. And I started going to Career Day for elementary schools, and at first I would talk about being an actress because I was on the soap opera and on the nighttime television. That was all very exciting to talk to little kids about being an actress. And then I talked about being a writer. And then when I had my fitness studios around the world, I talked about owning my own business. And, you know, so I wanted, and then finally I thought, crazy for me to do this because I have the minds of little children. And so I decided to talk about philanthropy. And these are all these children from first grade to fifth grade, and philanthropist is a really big word to put on a blackboard. You always want to check it the night before to make sure you're spelling it right when you're working with children. And I would tell kids how philanthropist gives something to someone that needs something. So if you've ever given someone a hug, you're a philanthropist. If you ever made someone laugh, you're a philanthropist. If you've ever shared your food or your sandwich or your candy, you're a philanthropist. And, you know, and I would talk to them about that. And then we had fake money, and we would have fake $20 or whatever to give the kids, like, you know, Monopoly money, and we would let them buy the $12 worth of anything in the room, and we had all these little toys in the room, and they could buy stuff, and then they had $8 left, and with that $8, they could be philanthropists, and they could give it to the puppies at the SPCA, or to the people in Haiti, or to their church, or they could send children that don't have money to camp or whatever, and then they would write letters to me, you know, when I grow up, I'm going to be a philanthropist, spelled like all of these different ways, but it's never too early or too late, right, to teach giving. And so when people come to you in your ministry and their hearts are closed and they're heavy, where do you begin with them?
I'm sorry, what?
When people come to you as a minister in your ministry and their hearts are heavy and closed and their world is dark and falling apart, where do you begin to open the light with people?
Well, it depends on the situation and the person, truthfully. The first place I begin is usually with their breath, which is the first place I would begin with anyone. You didn't pay for your air. You get it freely. You're not fighting to breathe air, and you feel like if you breathe air, somebody else is not going to get enough air to breathe. And so I remind people that everything that they have to sustain in this physical body is already given them, the air, the water, mainly the air. Without air, we don't live. And I don't have to breathe over here and worry about somebody breathing right next to me is going to get more air than me. Okay,
great.
Really? Okay. And so when we bring everybody back to the breath and back to where they are, right in their own bodies, and breathing, that there's plenty of air to breathe, there's plenty of air for their oxygen and oxygen for their cells and for their body, and then we can move forward from there to deal with whatever issues they may have or whatever kind of financial situation may be going on, and realizing that, things like, we stop spending a lot. I don't spend anything ever. I don't spend money. I circulate it, because with the idea of spending money becomes the idea that it's going to run out. And so we stop spending immediately and we start circulating. And that's what we do with our air. We breathe in air and we breathe out carbon dioxide, which goes to the plants that are sitting in my room or outside. And then those plants breathe in my carbon dioxide, and guess what they give off? Oxygen, so that I can continue breathing. You see, it's a circulation. So if there's circulation in nature, there's also circulation in the made-up stuff that we've made up as a society, as a human race, which is money and things like that. So, we go back to the breath. I always go back to the breath.
That's fantastic. That is my very favorite. I just made myself a note. Stop spending money. Circulate it. That is such a fantastic concept, and something so easy that everyone that's listening to the show can do. I mean,
yeah,
so
don't
now
ever
we have,
spend another dime, ever.
No.
Ever.
So,
don't
okay,
spend
so
anything.
Those of you making your New Year's resolutions, one, love out loud. Number
yes,
two.
Love out loud and circulate.
And circulate. I think these are great New Year's resolutions, because these are New Year's resolutions people can keep.
Yep.
These are ones that they actually can live moment to moment and day by day.
Yeah.
And so as it, yes, go ahead.
And if you don't, if you forget, you don't beat yourself up. That's the other key.
That's
you don't beat yourself up for forgetting. You don't. But you don't beat yourself up for not loving out loud today. I was not nice to that person, or that person made me angry when they cut in front of me, and I wasn't so loving. Okay, move on. This is a new moment. You see. Acknowledge it, and then move on and do better in the new moment. You're always in a new moment. You can always choose from this moment.
That's such a refreshing concept. It really is. And so as you share these beautiful concepts, I wanted to ask you, you were a mediator as a little kid, which I absolutely love. I've never, ever met anybody who told me they were a mediator when they were little.
Yeah.
I'm a 6-year-old mediator. I had a calling to be a mediator. And then what drew you into the ministry? Because, I mean, that's a huge call.
Yeah, right.
That's
what I thought too.
It's not like, okay, I'm going to take up swimming or something, or I've always wanted to play tennis. I mean, that's a life commitment and calling. And so, what drew you? What sound was it that you heard in your heart or outside that drew you into the world of ministry?
Well, the interesting thing is, like I said, I was raised Catholic, and so when I was about 6 years old. Maybe 5 or 6, I had this dream. I remember waking up, and I had a dream that I was in a room with all these masters of the universe, the high council masters of the universe, and they told me that I would be able to help change the world. Now, I'm 6, okay? And I woke up, and I didn't know what that meant, and so, of course, I went to church, and I saw the priest, and I said, I want to be a priest. And he said, I'm sorry, you can't be a priest. I said, well, why not? He said, because only men are priests. Women can, you can be a nun. I said, but I don't want to be a nun. I want to be a priest. And that was the beginning of me realizing that I had a calling. Now, the older I got and the more I got into doing, performing and doing things like that and ice skating and acting and all of those things, that kind of fell by the wayside as far as the actual pursuit of being a minister. I was always the person that people would come to, even if I was on the set or you know, backstage, people would come to me and start talking to me about things. But it wasn't until I actually got to Agape in 1999 or 2000, and I went to a visioning that Reverend Michael had. Reverend Michael is the founder of Agape and also my boss. And he did this thing called visioning, and I saw myself as a practitioner through this visioning process. And I was like, oh my goodness, I have to become a practitioner. I thought I was an actress. So I started going into, you know, the classes to become a practitioner, and then about 2 months later, I caught the vision of myself as a minister, and I just kind of freaked out, actually, because I always have been spiritual. I've always had a spiritual path. I've always trusted that even if I couldn't see how, that God, love, beauty, grace would take care of me, even when I was living out of my car. You know, I had trusted that I would be taken care of, even if I couldn't see how that was going to happen. And I was, and I always was. But as far as the actual path of ministry, that didn't happen until about 2000. So it's been about 14 years now, 13 years that I was actually consciously on the path. But I've been on the path ever since I had that dream when I was a little girl and wanted to be a priest.
I love that, that was a calling of your heart and a knowingness. I mean, something that you know, that to me is so special, and it's so breathless, and it's so beautiful. And I love now that, you know, you're called to share love in a mm-hmm. whole different. And I love when you know, in your bio where it says that we begin seeing others, you know, in ourselves and ourselves in mm-hmm. others and mm-hmm. how we become one community. And so how did that realization and that epiphany come to you? So you're called into the ministry, and then were you then further called into teaching love of the heart?
I've continually delved into relationships ever since I can remember. You know, it's been a vital part of my life to find out what makes people tick, to find out why some relationships worked, why some relationships didn't, why some parents and their children worked and some didn't. You know, I told you my little friends would come and tell me their parents were yelling at them, and I'm like, but my mom and dad don't. Oh, wait a minute, I guess my dad does yell at me, you know, and so I always wanted to find out what was underneath all of that. And through the process of going through my prerequisites in my practitioner training and my ministerial courses, I came up with this thesis, which was relationship as a spiritual practice. And I realized through my own working through my relationships as a spiritual practice that that is really the way to have all relationships, because you got to remember, it's a spiritual practice, not spiritual. I got it done. I got it figured out, and it's I don't ever have to work on it again. Okay, it's a practice. It's something we do daily. It's being able to see the love, see the meditation, see the visioning, see the fellowship, see the circulation in all of our relationships. Whether it's, like I said, the guy on the street that cuts you off when you're late to work and you're trying to get there, you know, it's being that person. It's having a real spiritual practice as well, which is prayer and meditation and visioning and all of those things in relationship with yourself first. And then when you have it in yourself, it's impossible when you love yourself to hurt another human being. Impossible. Impossible. You can't hurt somebody else when you love yourself, because you see that they are, they're you. They're a reflection of you. Why would you want to hurt somebody if you don't want to hurt yourself? But most people don't love themselves fully and out loud, really. There's things they don't like about themselves, whether they want to have, you know, plastic surgery on this part of themselves, or they don't like their legs, or they don't like their toes, or whatever. There's usually something that people don't like about themselves. And when there's that little piece of something they don't like about themselves, what they're saying is that there's something wrong with me. And if there's going to be something wrong with me, then there's going to be something wrong with you. And that's why it all comes back to ourselves. If we can love every bit of ourselves exactly as we are, without trying to fix it, without trying to think that we aren't good enough as we are, when we love ourselves truly as we are, as God, as love, as beauty, as the expression of that which created us, which makes up ourselves and our skin and our hair, or lack of hair, doesn't matter, which makes us up, okay? Because I realize there are bald people, that's fine. I don't care. It's the bottom line is that which makes us breathe, that breath that we are. When we love our own breath, it's impossible to hate another being that breathes.
Wow. That just took my breath away because it's so true and it's so astounding and it resonates such oneness and such honesty and such awareness and presence at the very same time. I mean, that's really just breathtaking. And what do they say? It's stunning in words. I remember we had a whole conversation one day, what is stunning?
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, those are words that are just stunning because they're so real and they just stop you in that moment.
Right.
And that's what it is. And so just the presence is just gorgeous. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Right.
And
you're welcome.
Because agape, for those of you who are listening from around the world or even from around the United States, and if you've ever gone online to see agape, agape is filled with music. Agape has one of these world-famous agape choirs and the sound, and certainly Christmas is known for caroling and children singing, and, you know, people love Christmas carols, and every radio and every store has Christmas carols months before Christmas is coming. And so harmony in a relationship, whether that be sung or harmony in the heart. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I can, actually. It's first of all, agape in and of itself means unconditional love.
Oh.
And the word is a Greek word. It comes from Greece, and it is a Greek word that means unconditional love. Now, there are many agapes around the world, and there's a lot of agape Christian centers as well. But the Agape International Spiritual Center is the only one of Agape International Spiritual Center. That's the only one that we have. We don't have any affiliates or anything, but we do have associates. So that I just wanted to clarify that, because sometimes people have looked up the word agape and they see these other places and it's not us. So, but the harmony and the beauty that happens in our community, which is it's a trans-denominational, it's beyond denomination, just like what you said, it's about harmony and inclusivity. It's more than diversity, it's diverse, but it's inclusive. That means everybody is welcome. And so the harmony that happens in relationships comes from when we accept ourselves and our partner exactly as they are without trying to change them.
Hmm.
That is not always easy. That means you don't tell your husband or your partner, well, you know, that shirt would look better with those pants. Well, if that guy likes to wear it, or girl, it doesn't matter. If they like to wear that shirt with those pants, let them. Unless they've asked you, if they've said, you know, what do you think, you know, what does this look okay with this? That's a different story. Then they're asking for your input. But if you're giving your input in an attempt to fix somebody else thinking you know better than they do, you're not in harmony. You're in judgment. So harmony in relationship comes from accepting yourself and your partner exactly as they are, without trying to fix or change them.
That's fantastic. Well, that's great advice for any relationship, whether it's a marriage, whether it's a business partnership, whether it's your relationship with your children or your friends or your neighbors or, you know, family, or just to not try to change those around us. But
Which is why it's called Loving Out Loud, and it's relationship as a spiritual practice, because I guarantee you it will be a spiritual practice for you to keep your mouth shut when something you think isn't quite right in what's going on. It has been for me. I'm not immune to this. Do I still get angry? Absolutely. Do I still have feelings and emotions? You bet. But I don't have to inflict them on somebody else. I deal with them in my own place, in my own way, in my own home. Now, when you're with another partner, when you're with another person in close proximity, that can look like anger or arguments or something like that. But if you make agreements, which is why it's so important to have counseling before you get married to somebody, like I said, gay, straight, doesn't matter. Whether you're getting married, if you're getting married, you need to have boundaries and you need to have agreements in advance so that you can say, okay, when I get angry and I blow up, it's not necessarily about you, it's just that I'm yelling and this is how I get it out. If you let them know in advance, then they're not going to take it personally when you blow up. But if they don't know this in advance, because nobody's bothered, because you haven't bothered to say it to them, or because I haven't bothered to tell my partner, hey, you know, when I drop something on the floor, I may yell and say, ah, you know. But if I haven't said that, then he takes it personally, or my mother takes it personally. If I haven't said something in advance, hey, this is just how I blow off steam, it is not personal to anybody else, it's just me, then that onus is on me. But if I explain it in advance, then that lessens the possibility of them taking it on when I blow up. Does that make sense?
It does. You know, it's interesting that you say that, because one of the things that I remember most about my childhood, and I have incredible parents, and for those of you who have listened to the show through the years, I've told so many stories about the incredible parenting that I've had. But my parents used to always say to my brother and to myself, before we were ever reprimanded, when whenever we did anything wrong, whatever it was, before they, you know, would reprimand us, they'd always say, you know that I love you.
Right.
And we'd say yes, and they'd say, but when you go to so-and-so's house after school and you don't call, we get freaked out because we love you, and so therefore you're grounded for till you're 40 or whatever. You know, we're like,
right.
You know that we love you. But when you stick your fingers in the socket, you're going to get a life. But whatever the lesson was, it started with, you know that I love you.
Right.
And that was incredible, because no matter what came at us in a lesson, it was a lesson because they loved us and they were helping us grow.
Mm-hmm.
It was never that we were bad, evil children, that, you know.
Right.
So, you know, those things that you remember, you know, I remember that my dad had sat, you know, at the edge of my bed. I was crying hysterically. I was around 6 years old and crying and crying the way little girls cry, where you go, you know, whatever. My dad had said, you know, tell me what's happening. And of course, I just kept little girl crying. And then he said to me, let me tell you something. There will never be another second of another minute of another day that mommy or I love you any less than we love you right now. But without you sharing, we can't love you more. Share with us so we can love you more. And that was, and then all of a sudden, well, you know, whatever it was, it squealed from a six-year-old. But growing up, my brother and I would always go to my parents because no matter what was happening in our lives, we always knew by sharing we would be loved more. So I love the fact that you say, by having the counseling, you're saying, okay, so this is the preface. You know that I love you. By sharing, you'll be loved more. And this is the way that I communicate, and I just want you to be aware of it so you know it's not you. That's my form of communication. And the fact that you walk people through those steps is so genius and so brilliant for relationships. So kudos to you.
Well, I will tell you honestly that that is not something I learned in my family of origin. That is something I have had to learn on my own since I got older. Because it was not okay to speak up in my family. Okay? It was not. I wish that it would have been lovely to be able to have that, you know, but it wasn't. And so I had to literally learn that or relearn that. I think we come into this world knowing that that we're really okay, and then depending on our families of origin and what beliefs they, you know, have brought in and we've brought in and all of that, that kind of gets mushed and squashed down at times. And so it wasn't until I think I was probably in my 20s and I started doing a lot of work with myself and clearing out some of the old stuff and the old beliefs, and then I went, wait a minute. It's okay for me to speak up.
Absolutely. And we're wrapping up the show, and I just want to make sure that people know your Loving Out Loud is coming up. And to please go to Agape Live, to the classes. And I so recommend that people take this course. Find Reverend Rio Kelly. She is amazing. She's the most incredible loving heart. It's the incredible consciousness to be able to love, and especially at this holiday season and always in the greatest New Year's resolutions, to love out loud and to circulate. Mm-hmm. And I'm so blessed and so honored and so grateful that you were with us and with our audience today and sharing your love and your special and unique heart. So thank you so much for being with us.
And thank you so much for having me. It's been an honor and a privilege and a pleasure. I am very blessed and grateful for your asking me to be with you and with your audience today. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. What a beautiful guest. So I wish you all a merry, merry Christmas from the bottom of my heart. May you find music and magic and joy and happiness. Share with your family. Share in the elation. May it be a special week, one that you remember always, and give and give and give and give some more to everyone that you can, to all those around you, to all the love. And then next week, we have Hermia Nelson talking about partnerships and love, and we'll talk about that very sacred and special New Year's Eve with your loved one, and if you don't have a loved one yet, how to go ahead and bring somebody and draw somebody into your life to spend New Year's with and start your year off truly in the center of your heart. So this is Nicole Brandon with Hourglass Bride wishing you a very Merry Christmas and a wonderful week. Happy holidays, and wishing that all of your dreams and all of your joys come true.